faked you out there for a second, but it is now time for History Matters with the one and only Scott Washington, a local historian extraordinaire, taking a look back at this week in history. Scott, how are you?
Doing good, Aaron, and it's always a pleasure to hear that theme song. I just get it.
Especially
in the
after like a 3-second
delay.
That's
right. That was, you know, our anxiety. Right? This is what Bob Hope would do. He'd tell a bad joke and then he would wait.
Just wait, yes.
And then there it comes. Like, oh, yeah. The relief that people feel across the globe when they hear
this.
I'm used to
being on the board here at the radio station, but you're seeing this. If you've never been in the listening out there and you've never been in the studio, I've got the soundboard in
it's
front
incredible.
Of me, computer over here, another
it's
computer.
Amazing.
And you have to hit, you know, you hit a particular button, but if like three other buttons aren't in exactly the right place, then nothing happens, and then you're like, what am I doing? Oh, there it is. Okay, fix that. Now
it
we can
really
do it.
It really is amazing,
fine.
And I get a front row seat to this, but it's like those acts where the plates are juggling on a pole, and Aaron is doing this seamlessly.
Yeah.
It's just kind of amazing.
All of which is to just amuse you all through the fact that I just completely screwed up a minute ago, but it's fine. We're all good. It's professional.
Well, I would blame it on the orchestra that was playing
there
that theme song.
Yes,
they were late
yes.
to the cue.
This week in history, what's
going
on?
Oh, my gosh. This is one of the best weeks for one of the great stories of history. It's on May 7th, 1992, is when the 27th Amendment is finally ratified. Now, the background, and I call it this, it's not over till it's over.
Yeah.
Now, if we kind of go back 200 and some years earlier, of course, we have the new Constitution that's sent out to the states for ratification, and as it begins to go through the process, there seems to be one kind of a glaring omission. There are no Bill of Rights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people honestly thought they didn't need it. All these states had their own Declaration of Rights, but it began to be worrisome. However, amazingly enough, the Constitution begins to be ratified. In fact, half the states ratified unanimously the vanilla version without anything, just mm-hmm. having the executive, judicial, legislative branch elements. But half of them do suggest amendments. And as we've said many times on this program, what happens in Hillsborough changes history because Hillsborough, North Carolina's conference that meets in Hillsborough, becomes the only constitutional convention of the 13 to actually postpone ratifying the Constitution until provisions are made for introducing a Bill of
Which
Rights.
Which is actually a really good move on their part,
oh,
if you want a
tremendous.
Bill of Rights. Because all of those states that ratified the Constitution
yeah.
and tacked on amendments, those amendments were meaningless because no other state had said anything about
no.
them. It was just, we would very much appreciate it if you would stick this on to the Constitution. But there was no promises made,
no.
no quid pro quo, none of that. It was
no.
just very hopeful ratification votes.
That's right.
These other states.
And
yeah.
of those, the states that you know, they've ratified it, North Carolina could have rubber stamped it. They don't. They
yep.
hold out. They're one of only two states, Rhode Island being
Rhode
the
Island's
other
the
one,
yep.
which finally does ratify the Constitution.
Yeah.
In,
Rhode Island, which wanted no part of the Constitution to
no.
begin with.
That's
like
right.
They didn't send delegates. They just plugged their
well,
ears and la-la-la their way through 1789.
It up. They were supposed to hold a convention. They didn't even
they
do
didn't
that.
Even
they
didn't even bother
just,
to do that,
just,
yeah.
And said, hey, we're going to have a vote. They let the population vote without any discussion. And, of course, they voted it down, not knowing what this was all about. And it takes them to 1790 before they finally go, oh, yeah, well, maybe we should have a convention. And then they do approve it.
Typical
but
Rhode Island.
North Carolina is really significant
yes,
because
yeah.
it is the fourth largest state in terms of population.
Mm-hmm.
It stretches from the Atlantic at that point all the way to the Mississippi, encompassing what is today Tennessee. It's huge. So for them to say, not yet,
mm-hmm.
is a really significant and meaningful action, and that's why it's the first constitutional crisis the country faces, because the early leaders realize, without North Carolina, this whole thing looks kind of odd. So the new country comes together in the spring of 1789 under this new constitution, and North Carolina is not technically part
yep.
of the United States. They have to send the equivalent of an ambassador, which is just bizarre.
Yeah.
But that's when they realize they've got to do something. So James Madison proposes amendments June 9, 1789.
James Madison, who didn't want a Bill of
no.
Rights in the first place, but recognized the need.
He says, okay,
yep.
and we'll do this and this. And luckily, Roger Sheridan of Connecticut when he hears Madison proposing to stick them here and there, and he said, no, we're not going to touch the original document. Mm-hmm. If we want to amend anything, we put them on afterwards. So after a summer of debate, and we don't know what the Senate did in those, because it was still secret at that point, but the House of Representatives was pretty rambunctious. Early September, they come together. They finally come up with 12 amendments. They're passed September 25th, 1789. Those 12 amendments go out for ratification. And now it's concerns met. North Carolina meets again. And, of course, they ratify the Constitution and the amendments a month later. 2 years later, when Virginia ratifies 10 of 12 of those amendments, mm-hmm. that's sufficient enough. 75%, three-quarters of the states had to do it for 10 to take effect. And it's actually numbers 3 through 12. 1 and 2 were not adopted.
Yeah.
Number 1 had to do with representation, and that became a moot point. In fact, if we had stuck with that, we'd have like 4,000 representatives.
Yeah. What was the, that first amendment was
capped.
There was going to be like one representative for every, what was it, 30,000 or something like that. Nowadays, it's one representative for every 700,000, and that's the way we keep Congress
that's
relatively
manageable.
So it got
capped. Yeah. But the second one
didn't do that.
Was a really interesting amendment. In fact, North Carolina had proposed this, which was that to no pay raise for any member of Congress could take place until the next election.
Yep.
And that was to provide a check and balance. Well, it didn't get enough votes, so there it sat. Now, this is the wonderfully cool part of this story. In 1982, a 19-year-old sophomore, Gregory Watson, is doing a paper in political science and says, I think this can be open. And his professor says, well, that's ludicrous. No, it cannot be revived. And this is one of those ones, well, all right, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Yes.
He begins to investigate. It becomes a 10-year crusade. And and the end of that, on May 7th, 1982, the 27th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution gets approved as written. 202 years 7 months, 10 days after it was first went out.
Yep.
Isn't that just
awesome.
Oh,
that's
my
great.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That,
and it's a good amendment, too.
It is.
Like, how many times has Congress just, like, casually, blithely voted itself a pay raise? Now, at least they've got to stand before the voters and say, hey, I just voted myself a pay raise. If you want me to get it, vote for me. If you want my hated enemy to get it, vote for the other guy.
Now, here's the cool thing. The other part of the story, Paul Harvey would say, he got a C on that paper.
Of course
1982.
He did, yeah.
Okay. Well, now, fast forward to 2017,
uh-huh.
and a professor in that same school is revisiting and goes down and tracks down this fella and also says, goes to the school and says, I think we should amend that grade. And they do. He wants to give it an A+. The school says, we can't go higher than an A. So he does get an A.
Oh, that's
on that.
Good. Does that affect his overall grade for the class?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I just got done with a semester of American government where I have students who got a C on papers.
Yeah.
And if they had gotten an A, it wouldn't have affected their final grade. So it was just the one paper.
I don't know about that part. But
so what happened to Gregory Watson? Like, where is he now? Other than sitting at home waiting for the phone to ring, telling him you got a slightly better. Better grade than you did.
He went to and started a farm, and that's where he went. But, he has a place in history, 19-year-old who writes a paper and looks at it with fresh eyes, and sometimes that's all it takes. Like over in Durham, we have a couple of those bridges that are low-hanging. It's clearly marked how high they are. Every time, periodically, a truck gets stuck under there. And the first time it happened, they were talking about, and this is a bridge where trains go across overhead,
right.
And so an underpass. And the first time it happened, nobody knew what to do, and they were getting engineers out and talking about removing the bridge. Finally, somebody came up, and I think it was a little kid, who said, why don't you just let the air out of the tires? So sometimes,
really?
And that is the way they actually solve that solution. Whenever they have that problem,
they let the air out of the tires.
That's right, and then they can actually.
I didn't know that.
I thought dig further. No, that is the out of the box solution.
Great.
So sometimes, problems take a new set of eyes, but this one has got to be one of the best. It's not over till it's over stories that I know of that happens this week. which there is really cool. Now, here's a hilarious story.
I know how you're going to top that.
Like, I don't know. I know.
That's the best story of the week.
There is. Yeah. Well, the the first cartoon, that's May 9th. 1754.
Oh, that's supposedly Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin,
yeah.
Join or die with the snake in pieces.
The snake broken
into
13 pieces.
So he's already, you know, pushing for let's do something. Already was seeing as far back as 1754.
Yep.
There are problems with.
A really fascinating story with that. I read a book. I think I've mentioned this on this segment. I've definitely mentioned it in the Talking Book segment with Susan Brown. Liberty and Freedom by David Hackett Fisher. Fisher is this great. He's a visual historian. So he writes these long books about American history, but they're very easily. They're very readable because they're long books, but they're accompanied by all of these visual aids.
Oh, wow.
And this was a book called Liberty and Freedom about the symbolism of liberty and freedom throughout American history and the different symbols and visual images that we use to symbolize or represent the concept of liberty and freedom and the use of those two words in very different ways to mean different things. But the thing about the snake that he brought up was that the snake has often been this image, this symbol of liberty. I think about the eagle, for instance, or there's a couple of other animals that we often use.
Yeah, we don't think of the snake as being the one.
But the snake has been kind of a thing. So you've got the join or die, you've got don't tread on me, which is another snake imagery. And
think of the U.S. Medical Association with
the snake wrapped around. Yeah. But the thing with the snake is that it keeps to itself. It kind of lurks away. It doesn't want to get involved with civilization in any way. It just wants to be off on its own. But if you approach it in kind of a threatening way, it will lash out and strike. It doesn't want to, but it will. And if you approach it in any way, it will interpret it as threatening.
Yes.
And that is a really fascinating kind of encapsulation of how Fisher says kind of backcountry Americans, like further inland in the Appalachians and that area, kind of conceived of themselves as being, I don't want anything to do with Europe. I don't want anything to do with New York or Boston or Philly or any of these other like big cities. I just want to be on my own. I want to keep to myself, and I will keep to myself. But if you come my way, I will strike back to defend my territory, as it were. And you kind of get that sense even up to today. And that's why you see like the don't tread on me flags that still lurk around. Like there's a reason it's a snake.
Well, I think that's part of the DNA of Americans is pretty much live and let live. And why there's a great deal of tolerance for diversity. And if people start pushing that, that's why we've also had the counter movement of civil rights and advocacy for the rights of all Americans to live peacefully.
Which also uses freedom imagery as well.
Exactly.
So it's not just like living in isolation. There's also freedom in the sense of like we're all in it together and freedom in community and things like that.
That's a really fascinating story. Yeah, and you know, and you think about the other animals like turkey that I think Benjamin Franklin proposed as the national bird, which he was thinking of the wild turkey, not the one that ends up on Thanksgiving.
Like, Ben, we've got another thing we can slap the name Wild Turkey on. It'll work so much better for everyone. Trust us. We got this.
You know, but I'm sure there's some other kind of imagery. Bears, badgers. I mean, you know, anything that is.
There's some really weird ones that Fisher uncovered. Yeah. Like, I think badger might have been one, actually.
Yes, I think that's what I would have recalled as another one.
So anyway.
All right. Now, this is, you said, can I top this? This not quite as historic, but it's just strange. 1991. Now get this. Geneticists, this is May 7th, 1991, geneticists at Johns Hopkins University are given permission to clone Abraham Lincoln's genes.
I want that.
No. And I thought, what? You know, I wonder what the progress is. Well, we got a young fella coming along.
Yeah. What would he be, 27 years old now?
That's right.
In law school. Kind of gangly.
Somehow, I just don't see that. It just was. It's one of the odd things that have come up. But I did find something.
Wait, do you tell the kid when he's growing up, or do you just wait until the day that he looks in the mirror and goes, "Wait a minute"?
Yeah. Why'd you call me Abe? Well, here's one. May 8th is a pretty interesting day. 1886 is when a soft drink was invented by John Pemberton called the esteemed brain tonic and intellectual beverage.
Makes sense.
That we know better today as Coca-Cola. Yep. That's a little easier to rub.
So it was originally a headache medicine, right?
Yes.
I think that's the story, that it was originally patented as, or originally created as,
that's
like
right.
the sort of the snake oil tonics that people would hawk on the streets
yes.
back in that day, and then like add carbonated water to it, and apparently it's this refreshing fizzy drink.
Well, you know, this is an interesting. May 8th is 1945 Victory in Europe Day mm-hmm. is celebrated because of Germany's unconditional surrender the previous day. You also have as of 1980. Smallpox
yeah,
is certified yeah. as obsolete, and the only examples exist in laboratories under very tightly controlled conditions. I mean, that's just fascinating to think that here's something that has ravaged humanity for millennia,
yeah.
and it's pretty much eradicated as far as we know.
Yep.
Also, the U.S. Post Office is permanently established by Congress on May 8, 1794.
Yep.
Probably so people could write about, gee, isn't there some of that steamed brain tonic and intellectual
yeah.
beverage somewhere?
Well, prior to that, you know, they didn't have a post office, so
the
whole exchange about the constitutional amendments that we were talking about, like it took forever for news to get from one state to the other.
Right. And also on that day, Ferdinand de Soto discovers the Mississippi River. I think it was already there.
Yeah, first European.
Yeah, exactly.
First European.
That's right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
that's significant.
And not even the first European,
no.
leader of the first group of Europeans. Because
right.
you know there was some scout that ran ahead and came back and was like, hey, de Soto, I see something up there you might want to check out. It's big and long.
That's why colonial times look so much more like Europe. Because
yeah,
you have Spain in the middle, you have France, and you have England. They're all in the Americas as we know it.
Yep.
Which makes it more interesting. Also, on this date, May 8th, 1911, Rudolf Flesch is born. He's an Austrian-born American author, wrote a book, Why Johnny Can't Read, in 1955.
Yes.
And he advocated the use of phonics to sound out words. And supposedly, his book inspired Dr. Seuss to write The Cat in the Hat.
Oh, nice.
Isn't that interesting?
All right, interesting.
Which comes out in 1957.
The other thing that happens on May 8th, and we're both
yes.
looking at the same list, the ACC is created.
Yes.
Seven schools splitting off from the Southern Conference because the Southern Conference had banned bowl games over a whole bunch of financial scandals.
Right.
So the ACC grew out of a bunch of people that just wanted to get in on some of that.
Noise.
On some of that lucrative bowl game action.
Yes, but
apparently.
I'm sure that was from
yeah.
ticket sales.
Oh,
you know?
I'm sure.
Yeah, nothing else. Yeah.
yeah. The one fun thing about this, and you were sending me this information, that the Atlantic Coast Conference was just one of several proposed names for
yes.
this conference.
Wasn't that interesting? Some of them were Dixie, the Tobacco Conference, the Blue-Gray Conference.
Yeah, none of those would have
Southern Seven.
Would have been awkward
no.
today. Good Lord.
Well, and of course, the Atlantic has grown, so
yeah,
we have more
yeah.
schools. We have Boston College in there, Notre Dame. So it's a lot more than just the original seven, but it was actually someone from Duke that proposed the name the Atlantic Coast Conference, and
yep.
that's what sticks.
Eddie Cameron,
which is
yeah.
kind of amazing to think about. All these things happen on that day
yeah.
in
But
in
it
history.
Also sort of reflects, and you know, we've had this debate around Silent Sam and the Confederate
yes.
flag and like the role of the Confederacy in history and just
right.
how endemic this myth of the lost cause and this embrace of the Confederacy was in the
that's
South
right.
for more than 100 years, to the point where, oh, we're going to create a new athletic conference for colleges. Let's call it the Dixie Conference. Let's call it the Blue-Gray Conference.
Right.
Like, that was seriously considered
yes.
in
yeah.
1953. Like, that's where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luckily, they chose something a
luckily,
little
they chose something a little different.
More inclusive that has lasted the years.
Yeah. We got Scott Washington here in the studio with time for one more. What do you got?
Well, here's one. May 9th, 1712, the Carolina Territory is divided into North and South Carolina.
Nice.
At one point, it was this huge chunk as Carolina, and finally they said, we've got enough settlers, and just governing that large expanse demanded that it be divided.
Love
so
it.
kind of interesting to see how things come together, how we are the beneficiaries of history. We are living from it. And also when you hear about the 27th Amendment and realize, you know, it's not over till it's over, and that's good for our lives and history, too.
There you go. History matters. Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you, Eric.